You're listening to Eye on the Ball with Steve Rivera. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, welcome back to the second hour of Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera. I'm looking forward to this hour just as I was the first hour, talking to Ryan Hansen in about 9 minutes, talking about a lot of things, the current state of the basketball team under Sean, the Pac-12 such that it is. Today's the first game with ASU. Tomorrow, I think we have Washington and Oregon playing in the first round of the tournament. And then we're going to talk kind of the NCAA tournament, how it applied to Arizona throughout the years. Ryan's been involved with the program for probably more than 20 years as a student assistant manager and all the things that go along with it, and then kind of an administrator under Lute, and now as a radio guy for IMG and Mr. Brian Jeffries. So maybe talk some funny stuff. We've talked about some of the stories before, and I like him telling them because they're very funny, very funny. I witnessed them, wrote about them, but he's the one that saw them firsthand. So we'll do that about 2:15 for about 30 minutes. Maybe we get some calls in that time too. We already got rid of the tickets for the air show. Oh, they came and left real quick.
$120 a piece?
Yeah, that's what they're worth.
Would you get a flight? You get to ride on a plane or a blimp? Or?
Yeah, no, they're great seats. They're good food. I think you get some beverages with it.
Good seats. What do you mean, like in the air seats? Or
I know you're being facetious, but those
are... I'd sound really good. I'm just wondering, how do you get 120? It's free to the public, so they must be like really good if they're 120. Right.
You get to drive the plane. I have no idea, Bob.
Wow.
No. And are those questions are serious, Bob? Yes, kind of?
Never mind.
Thank you. Please, I didn't have to answer those questions.
Never mind.
They're good seats, $120. I didn't value it. Somebody else did.
I could go to 4 Sugar Skulls games for that.
Yes,
so.
Well, we know that
or
you're not
6.
A big spender, Bob. We understand that. But you're going to be there for free, too. You're going to be shaking hands, kissing babies, too, Saturday, right?
Well, if I have to kiss baby, well, as long as the baby's not snotty.
Oh, okay.
You know.
Yeah, you're one of those. Yeah, can you put a little guard between the... Yeah. Yeah, so...
The sneeze guard.
Meet Bob, everybody, the guy that I get to be with for 2 hours every day.
Well, not everybody is blessed like you, Stephen.
You sound like my mom.
What's that noise, Stephen? Are you exercising?
Mom, you know better. I don't exercise. I don't want to live a long life. It is what it is. So we'll talk a little bit about sports and maybe stop jabbering about nothing here with Bob. Anybody miss the tournament? Were you guys going to go to the tournament? Did you go for a number of years and now you have nothing to do in March because you always went to the tournament? I mean, this is like 35 years missing two times. Man, that's a long time of missing the tournament. So, hey, we got a call. Chuck?
Yes, yeah, about important things, too.
Chuck, how are you, Chuck?
Tell him, Chuck.
Hey, Chuck. Chuck. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Chuck.
I heard you talking about the air show and that you're going to be going out there Sunday.
Yes.
And I think you said you're going to go from what?
9:30 to 11:30.
Oh, don't do that.
Why
is that? You'll miss everything. You'll miss everything.
Oh, he's going to stay. He's going to stay.
Is it too early or too late?
Too early.
Well, you're too early.
Too early.
The Thunderbirds won't go up. They won't start flying until probably 1, 2 o'clock.
Well, that's when they have him working, actually, Chuck. He's like kissing babies and shaking hands, but he can hang out after that.
I misunderstood. I thought he was going to leave.
No, I
got to stay.
Chuck, in fact, I don't know what I'm going to do because if you're going to tell me that's going to be too late, there's 6:30 in the morning is too early for me.
He's going to bet on the Thunderbirds like he does ponies.
I'll probably stick around.
If you get there by, I would say, 10 o'clock, you'd be fine.
Yeah. No, I have obligations to these guys at 9:30 to 11:30. I'll probably stick around and see, because I've never been to a show like this, so I'm looking forward to it. I'll stick around. Are you going to be there, Chuck?
No, I've been to several of them, and you're going to really enjoy it, because there are so many ground displays that, you know, they'll let you go inside of a tank and some airplanes and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, okay.
So you'll really enjoy yourself.
Cool, cool. In fact, Chuck, I was thinking about you yesterday or this morning because I knew I was going to have Javier on talking about the baseball team. And in fact, I talked to the SID at U of A 2 days ago at the football practice to get Coach Johnson on. So I think that's going to happen next week. I'll let you know when that happens.
Okay, good enough then. I'll be listening.
Great, great. Thank you, Chuck, for always calling in when you have a chance. Good. That was Chuck. He always talks about the baseball team. I'm going to have a good time. Have you been to these shows before?
It's been a while. It's been a while. But, I mean, I've seen him for years because I live here. I've seen him in the air.
Oh, yeah.
I see him practicing all all week long or last couple of weeks. But, no, I've only been to one or two other ones, I think.
Back when the tickets were worth $50.
back in the old days when I was a wee lad.
Okay.
A wee lad.
Cool. No, I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to it.
Pancho, are you there, Pancho?
Is that Pancho? Is that really?
Pancho? I don't know. It could be Scooby Doo.
Bob, are you trying to get me in trouble or something?
No, I'm being lazy. I have headphones on and I have to take them off, screen your call, go, "Hey, how's it going?" And I hate to miss out talking with Steve because he's talking about, you know, air shows and non things. But I can let him talk by himself and talk to you off the air if you'd like.
Pancho, I guess the job must be going really well because your boss lets you continue to call.
Oh, God.
No, she's on the phone right now. So I wanted to just sneak this one in. And why are you trying to get me into a debate on live radio right now? I don't know how I feel about that. That guy Scott is obviously more well prepared than I am.
Wait, you can cram.
Wait a second. So just to clarify here, I talked to Sean. We talked to Scott, and I don't know Scott. I do know Pancho. To say if they want to have a debate next week about the U of A basketball program for 15 minutes. No, God, I couldn't take any more than 15 minutes of a debate between Pancho and Scott about their philosophies on life, the team, and coaching, and all that stuff. Scott has agreed to it. I asked Pancho whether he wanted to do it, and you're kind of debating right now.
Well, I do appreciate the fact that he didn't insult me on the air him. So he's already winning. So if it's public opinion, I'm guessing he's probably going to win hands down, regardless of his position. And I'm used to that, though, so that's okay.
Let me tell you something. I purchased the Team Scott and Team Pancho shirts already, so.
It might be more fun to plan a trip to Tucson and then we can all be in studio together.
Yeah, that would be
that.
Yeah, in separate rooms, of course.
Yeah, yeah. You put Poncho over here, or Scott, or whatever, you know, you, one with me.
Yeah, I've already using my Team Steve and Team Bob shirts as window cleaners, so don't worry about you.
You'll just use a magic marker and cross off Bob and put your name.
We have plenty in store, yes, yes. So, hey, think about it, Bob.
I'll do it if I can have Matt Moreno on my team, okay?
Good luck with that. Good luck with that. We'll figure it out. We'll set aside a segment. You guys can kind of either kumbaya with one another, or you guys can, you know, debate each other for 15.
Got to decide on what exactly they're debating. Is it Sean stays or Sean goes?
And the quality of the coaching, probably. There's a lot of things in there that they kind of debate on phone calls here.
Okay.
I feel like, you know, the girl on Mayberry RFD, the operator, "Could you get me Gertrude on the line?" And then these guys call back and forth and kind of having a conversation.
You know, a lot of old TV references
today. I'm an old dude. You know, this is not like Married with Children or something. But Pancho, think about it and then let me know sometime early next week.
Your agent called.
Right. Yeah, you're still a young guy. You'll be able to handle the punches. You're okay.
I'm not a young guy. I'm not a young guy. I need to know more about my adversary / opponent before I'm going to get into the ring. Now, you know that. I want to know a little more about his background.
Oh, no.
He's really
good. No, you just stay on topic, Pancho. Stay on topic.
You know he's not a Miller fan, so
absolutely.
There
not.
You go. And he doesn't
and
like
he likes
the
to
coach.
Throw people under the bus.
Wait a second. Are you a Miller fan? Let me.
I'm a little bit ambivalent, but I don't know how much better we're going to do. So we'll see what happens.
Okay.
You know, I mean, with the whole FBI thing, who knows?
Yeah, what right.
Happened.
Right, right. We'll find out. Let's have this debate before the FBI thing, and then we'll talk again afterward. So just think about it. We got to go to break, Pancho. I know your boss wants you probably to go back to work.
No, I'm in trouble. Yeah. I'm definitely in trouble right
she
now.
She doesn't listen to the show, does she?
Like many others.
I played a podcast for a couple times.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Yes. Listen to me. I'm on the radio.
Exactly. Validation. It's all about validation.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Hey, Pancho, thanks for calling in.
You're very welcome.
Let's take a break here. We're going to get Ryan Hansen on the other side of the break and talk about hoops here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera, and now on the line we have Ryan Hansen, formerly of the U of A in so many capacities. Hey, Ryan, I'm wondering, are you going through with withdrawals because there's no NCAA tournament to be at?
Oh, I should be somewhere in the United States in a gym at an open practice or a media session or something, and you know these stats. I mean, it's only the third time in the last 35 years Arizona has not participated in the NCAA tournament, and I traveled since 1994, so you do the math on that, and it does feel weird to be at home in the middle of March.
Yeah, no question, and some of the best times were during the tournament because you have these great bus rides, these great stories exclusive to the media the day before a game, and these crazy questions from the national media because they hadn't seen you all year. Good times and probably frustrating times because of the media requirements, yes?
Yeah, no doubt, and that's something that in the olden days, you know, the Lute Olson era, I think Coach Olson did a great job of every game during the regular season opening up the locker room, allowing access of our players to the media so that come into a tournament time, it was old hat. They were used to talking after a loss, used to talking the day before a game about their personal life, maybe a human interest story. So it's probably no surprise that many if not all of the Lute era alumni are articulate, can handle themselves in any situation from an interaction or an interview standpoint, and so many are professionally in broadcasting situations because of that preparation. So it is hand in hand, but boy, the microscope of the media in the month of March can be exhausting if there's something negative to pounce on.
Yeah, no question. I've been part of that for a number of years, a little bit longer than you, because if you started in 94, I was in 91. 91, and even before that, as a backup reporter back in Seattle, when they lost to Seton Hall, I think it was, and Khalid had that broken hand, broken finger, or whatever it was. Tell me, can you remember some of the great times during this time of year? And we've already had discussions, but I want to discuss a couple of other things involving Lute. We'll get to those with the popcorn and the Boise incident when they didn't let him. Let's go with the Boise incident. We've talked about that before, but I'm sure some of the new listeners haven't heard the story. So you get on the bus, go to practice and the media session, and what happens?
Well, it's 2005, and the NCAA has just instituted some additional security for the open practice. And what people may not realize is the day before the NCAA tournament games, each team is allotted time on the floor to go through and get used to the rims a little bit. But it's a fun open practice that fans are allowed free admission into the arena. So the security is much like game day, though, because they want to keep that floor free from riffraff, if you will. And so we arrive at Taco Bell Arena there in Boise in 2005. We're preparing to play Utah State the next day. And I had reminded the team and the players on the bus, make sure you have your driver's license or photo ID, because that is required by the NCAA to allow you floor access. Everybody says from a man to man, I got it. I got my ID. Sure enough, we get to the security checkpoint at Taco Bell Arena. First man through security is none other than the head coach, Lute Olson, and he reaches for his wallet. It's not in his sweatsuit that he had worn that day. And I'm not kidding. The NCAA officials would not allow Lute Olson. By the way, he's in the Hall of Fame at this point. He's already been admitted and inducted into the Hall of Fame, and they don't allow a Hall of Fame coach onto the floor until we had a manager get back on the bus, hightail it back to the hotel, get in his suite, secure that driver's license, and then finally he was able to get to the floor, because for the first half of the open practice, he was coaching from the stand. It was fantastic.
Yeah, to me that was a classic story, a classic story. Do you remember anything that happened in Albuquerque? I think that was the first time back after he said, I'm never going to come back to Albuquerque.
That's right. Yeah. So it's circa 2002, and we had been in Albuquerque in 1999
right.
and lost to New Mexico with Jason Terry at a last-second shot that, I'm not kidding, it took the ball handler 8 seconds to dribble up the floor, but there was only 4 seconds on the clock. So either time runs slow in Albuquerque or the trigger finger of the official scorekeeper was a little slow. And Lute came out publicly, like you said, and told them, the rivalry series, we will never continue this series with New Mexico again. Arizona will never be back in the pit. And I get, there it was, 2002, our name comes up on Selection Sunday, and sure enough, we are slated to play UCSB, UC Santa Barbara, in Albuquerque in 2002 in the first round, and every single fan in the pit was a fan
yep.
of the Gauchos
yep.
that day. They were not Arizona fans. We squeaked out a close game, in part, we see this a lot. Steve, you and I have
yep.
also talked about this. The underdog always gets the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
You could be a number one seed 30 miles from home, and the underdog will be cheered for more so than any. But that one might be where the, in this case, the Gauchos from UC Santa Barbara, they had every native Albuquerque citizen cheering for them.
Yeah, no, he was not a fan back in the. No one was a fan of Lute back then in Albuquerque at the time. It's very funny, and they didn't go back. They didn't play each other again until recently when Sean kind of re-upped on the
right.
On the game. What about? And I just lost it. What about? Well, the 96, 97, obviously the 97 years were infamous with the guys, you know, getting through the first and second rounds and then just having fun after beating Kansas.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, South Alabama and in Memphis in the first round, and we're down double digits with about 4 minutes to go, and everybody was thinking, here Arizona goes again, another first-round
right.
loss. And
uh-huh.
That one might have been the scariest game of all six games. Even the national title game, I think I had more confidence that we were going to win in overtime against Kentucky, the defending national champs, than I did South Alabama that day. But some of the other great stories were when Arizona started, when Lute and the team, we went on team walks on the day of games.
Yeah.
And we would find a watering hole, a river or a lake or something, and Lute, this started in 1994, where he spit in the river in Charlotte for us at the Final Four. So that became a tradition. And it's kind of funny to think, but Lute Olson, who is a cross between Cary Grant and John Wayne, more on the classy side, but to see Lute Olson spit is actually something that is a sight to behold in the river on purpose. But that some of the superstitions and traditions that even the team had, you know, even Lute, the Hall of Fame coach, he kind of had his superstitions. You talked about, you know, you had to have his popcorn and his Diet Coke before every game. But spitting in the river at the NCAA tournament was always a good luck charm.
Yeah, I think that happened. I think I did a story about that in Sacramento when they played in the first round of Sacramento. I think that was 98.
That's right.
I could be wrong. Yeah, 98. So tell me, what about going to Utah, the number one seed in the whole tournament? Lauren Woods, I think, was out that year because of his back, but they were still the best team, the number one seed in the whole tournament. They win their first game. I think Utah playing up there was always difficult, and
yep.
then they lose to Wisconsin.
Yeah, we went into the NCAA tournament. It's 2000, so you're right. We had been on a roll that year. Lauren was still trying to figure out if he was going to have to undergo back surgery. So at the time, he had been out, but the NCAA selection committee
mm-hmm.
didn't know if he was going to be back or not. So it's kind of topical when you think of this year's tournament and Zion Williamson's availability. The smart kid from LSU, is he going to be back or not? And those things got resolved prior to Selection Sunday. But it wasn't as hypersensitive back in 2000 as it is now, with information being shared and people know so much more about teams. But yeah, we were slated as a number one seed and felt like we were pretty good. We
mm-hmm.
beat Southern that day, the Jaguars. I still remember, I'll give you the best story of that one. The band,
yeah.
they intentionally didn't set up before the game, and after the first media timeout, descended from the top of the Huntsman Center, walked down the stairs playing the drums and the brass,
yeah.
just going
mm-hmm.
crazy all the way down. You want to talk about a crowd turning on Arizona?
Yeah.
The entire Huntsman Center became a Southern Jaguar fan that day because of the band. Well, luckily, we were good enough to beat them that day. But, boy, Wisconsin beats us, and we thought we had just laid an egg. Wisconsin went to the Final Four that year as an 8 seed, beating us in the second round, kind of propelled them into the Final Four in Indianapolis.
Yeah, no question. In fact, after that game and after that whole series when Wisconsin got to the tournament, there was some thought as they needed to speed the game up because Wisconsin played that ugly, muck-it-up kind of game, and it was not pretty. But, you know, under Bennett, I think Bennett was the coach then, and they said we got to figure out a way to make this game faster, and they kind of instituted some things to change the game. But still, the Bennetts can coach defense.
No doubt, and that's where he Tony has definitely learned it from.
Yeah.
And it goes back to not just the Wisconsin days, but I think he was at UW Green Bay mm-hmm. prior to that, and that's where those principles came into play. And when it's sound, it works. But boy, you know, Virginia saw last year when that slowdown style backfires on you, it can go bad with UMBC doing something that had never been done with a 16 over a 1. I'll be interested to see if that becomes more real and more frequent. A 16 over a 1 seemed like it was never going to happen.
Right.
Cool.
Right, no. And everyone talks about parity. I still think that parity is okay. Yeah, I understand that. But it's how you play that day, and if the wrong matchup finds you, you're going to lose.
Yeah, there are a few critical points to advancing in the NCAA tournament. Some of them in your control, some of them absolutely out of your control. You definitely have to be good. It's a favorable seeding helps you, but we've seen higher seeds get there to the Final Four and not have the best path. But really, the two things is you got to be hot, and you got to be lucky, and you got to have a good matchup.
Yeah.
And some of those things are out of your control. And Arizona has benefited. And when I say matchups, that's not just the first round. It's what happens in the game right before the winner of the game. Arizona has benefited in some cases from upsets, and they've also not benefited in other cases from upsets in those other games. So it's kind of fun to watch how the bracket unfolds. And I think of that 97 run, Arizona played 3 double-digit seeds out of their 6 games. The other 3 games were against number 1 seeds.
Yep.
So it's kind of an interesting juxtaposition where Arizona played was dealt a beautiful hand of upsets. College of Charleston and Providence were the two other ones, in addition to South Alabama, that were double-digit seeds that should have never advanced as far as they did on paper. But then the Wildcats, of course, did something that's never been done by beating 3 number 1 seeds in the same tournament. So Arizona, while they were dealt a great hand in some cases, they had to go through the likes of Kansas, North Carolina, and Kentucky to win their only title.
Yeah, no question. Let's go back and we're going to go to break here, come back and talk about circumstances that got them far and didn't get them far enough. With that, while I Googled juxtaposition, what the heck were you using?
Juxtaposition, yeah. It's a good one. You need to add that to your broadcast.
Yes. We'll take a break here at 10:30. The Voice, Trusted Local News and Talk. Okay, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 10:30 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera, and I'm on the phone with Ryan Hansen, who does a lot of work with Arizona, University of Arizona, as a radio guy and was an administrator for a number of years. You talked about the bracket opening. I thought that did that exactly how Arizona needed it to do in the Russ Pennell year when you made it to the Sweet 16, and unfortunately had to face Louisville in the Sweet 16. But Cleveland State had beaten their team in the first round and kind of opened it up a couple of games for you guys.
Oh, that was that worked out beautifully for the Wildcats. The seeding in the first game met Arizona's strengths beautifully because Arizona was seeded, if I remember right, the 12 seed against the 5, which traditionally sets up for a potential upset. Arizona was seeded in the first round against Utah.
Mm-hmm.
This was, again, prior to Utah joining the Pac-12. This was Pac-10 days. And so the Wildcats' style of play was perfectly matched to beat a Utah slow-prodding bigger team, so they used their athleticism in that game, and Cleveland State beat Wake Forest, who had been on a tear, had multiple NBA players came off of that team. Cleveland State, on an era, it was just a bigger, longer, stronger team, just like Cleveland State. Fast, quick, used the three-point shot. The Wildcats had Jordan Hill, Chase Buttinger, Nick Wise, just better than Cleveland State. It worked out perfectly, but as you've kind of pointed out, you know, it, the luck kind of runs out sometimes, and they ran into a buzzsaw. Probably the most embarrassing loss from a point standpoint, not the worst loss from a psychological standpoint, but Louisville absolutely beat Arizona like a drum that year in Indianapolis, and really showed Arizona probably wasn't a Sweet 16 team, but history will say otherwise. Arizona was in the Sweet 16 that year.
Yeah, no, I remember Russ being so upset at Rick Pitino because it seemed like Rick Pitino was laying it on Arizona purposely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It also opened up, and if you remember in 2001, Arizona, in my mind, Arizona's best team ever, even though they didn't win the title, that they, at the Final Four, I thought, and this is the honest to God's truth, that Arizona lost the national title when Maryland, I think Maryland played North Carolina, played Duke, had Duke on the ropes, double digits. It was still early in the game, but had them by 15, maybe 20 points. And I'm thinking, as Maryland was playing these guys, that's right, because you guys played Michigan State, is that correct?
That's right.
Okay, so Maryland had these guys, and I'm thinking, Arizona's going to win the national title. Because I thought, no question, that you had Michigan State beat. That was not an issue. That Maryland was going to beat Duke. And I'm thinking, if Maryland beats Duke, Arizona's going to beat Maryland easily, not even close. And then, Duke came back and beat Maryland. And I said, well, now all bets are off.
Yeah, I think Maryland might have been up 20 in the first half with Lonnie Baxter. And they really were rolling over Duke. And I couldn't agree more. That matchup suited Arizona better. On championship game day, but who won the national title the next year? Maryland.
Right,
so
right.
So kind of crazy how that loss probably propelled them into a great offseason of focus and let's get ready. So they were clearly a great team at that moment, just it wasn't their time yet. But it fell the wrong way that day for Arizona.
Right, as it is, it's always about luck, like you said. You got to be lucky, you got to be healthy, kind of playing well at the time and confidence. There's a lot of factors in winning the title. And 97, they played out of their minds, but they played with a lot of confidence, like, you know, refused to lose, as Lute always says.
Yeah, and, you know, going into the Sweet 16 game that year, Michael Dickerson was asked at the press conference, hey, what is it? What's it feel like to be an underdog and be predicted to lose to Kansas tomorrow? And he said, he turned over to Lute and said, "Coach, they're not predicting us to win." And he was dead serious. He thought, "Who would ever pick Kansas to beat Arizona?" Well, a lot of experts. Kansas was 34-1 at that point, the number one overall seed, Roy Williams' best team to date at that point. Of course, everyone was picking Kansas, but the confidence level. And the ability of that team to be fighters and to us against the world mentality that Michael Dickerson, Miles, Mike Bibby, and Jason Terry, really those leaders on the perimeter had, was infallible.
It was also a test that how much Michael Dickerson paid attention to the news.
Yeah, that's probably true. Not exactly the most well-versed college basketball fan of our team that year.
No, he just wanted to play ball. That's all he wanted to do.
That's right.
Yeah. So in your time since 94, I think the 2001 team, and let's include 88 because you were probably a young kid then and you saw things.
I was in Tucson.
To me, the 2001 team was probably the best and most talented team to play here as a team. I know last year's group was very talented, and we all know what happened there. But would you agree with me? You can disagree with me if you do. You know, what's your best team?
2001, for me, the collection of talent that was assembled that day, what those guys went on to do. Were they the best team of cohesiveness and maybe not the best team? I think they're the most talented and best collection of talent. I think the 88 team was probably the best team from a cohesion standpoint. Offensively, I mean, if I remember right, I think the 88 team shot 52 or 53% on the year. They were like second in the nation in field goal percentage. So their offense was humming, and defensively they were solid. But when you break down the individual players and the collection of talent, I think the 01 group, when you can take Luke Walton, who was a 10-year NBA player, and he couldn't crack the starting lineup, that tells you how good that team was. And he wasn't a freshman that year. You know, he was a junior. In 2001, he was a redshirt sophomore. So he'd been on campus for 3 years, and he couldn't get in the starting lineup. And now you look back and see what Richard Jefferson, what do you have, an 18-year career? I mean, he was in the NBA since Wilt Chamberlain practically was in so long. So I would go with 0-1, Steve.
Yeah, no, I agree with you wholeheartedly. In fact, everyone knew, although we couldn't report it only because we couldn't verify it, that Richard was going to leave after that year. Michael Wright was going to leave after that year. Gilbert Arenas was going to leave after that year. Lauren was a senior at the time. Luke was coming back, obviously. Yeah. Jason Gardner wanted to leave, and he tried to leave, and he came back. But the biggest thing that I got out of that game after the game is obviously a very good game, some bad calls for the refs, and I usually don't say that with the Jason Williams thing. But Lute going to Richard, going to Michael, and going to Gilbert in the locker room, because it was open at the time, and him going to, and you know Lute doesn't show emotions very often and all that, but he went to Richard, shook his hand, he says, "Richard, I just want to say thank you for being part of my program." And he did that for the three guys, and right there, that was my confirmation saying these guys were done at U of A.
Yeah, and, you know, recruiting them, coming in, this was a different era, right? This was not the one-and-done era that we're in now. So guys leaving early was pretty rare, and we didn't recruit Gilbert Arenas with the thought that he was going to be around for just 2 years. We thought, and by all experts, that he was going to be a four-year player. So his emergence, though, it happened so quickly,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he skyrocketed during the tournament. It was evident he had to go, and he was going to be a great NBA player. And same with Richard Jefferson. He showcased his defensive abilities during that run to the national title game, that this guy can defend the best player on the floor at the highest level. That translated quickly to the NBA and aided him in his career. And, you know, same thing with Michael Wright. There was no reason for him to return. He wasn't going to improve his draft status or stock by coming back to Arizona. He had really achieved about as much as he could. So as hard as that was for those guys to walk away from the program before their eligibility was exhausted, it was the right move for them at the time, and we as a program, we all supported it.
Yeah, it's funny. I was just thinking now, Gilbert had such an impact, good and bad. The good was obviously he was talented. He emerged real quickly, and he was fantastic to watch in and near and far from the basket. But he chased away a couple big good players. Reuben Douglas, who left because he knew he was not going to beat out Gilbert Arenas. And then Luke. Yep. Luke, and give me the last name real quick because I just lost it.
Luke Recker.
Luke Recker, right. So those two kids came here and was ready for the year, and they say, "Gilbert, look at Gilbert. Agent Zero is pretty darn good." So we have
no... And add to that, Reuben Douglas, 2 years later, is a senior at New Mexico. He led the nation
right.
in scoring, so mm-hmm. he's not a slouch. And Luke Recker went to Iowa and became an all-Big Ten player at Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
So these are not two rummies. These are two guys who, in their own right, were excellent basketball players that realized pretty quickly they weren't going to see the floor as long as Gilbert Arenas was on campus. And to be frank, they were right.
Yeah, no question. And they had to go out and try to beat him every day, and they just couldn't do it. You know, do you have time to come back for another segment, our final segment?
Yeah, I sure do.
Great.
We got to get into the NCAA tournament and Arizona and UCLA's impact on the perception of the Pac-12.
Yeah,
and how. When it's good, it's good, and when it's bad, it's bad. We need to talk about
that. Yeah, let's do that. Let's save that for the last segment here. We'll take a break on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera. We have a few minutes left. Hey, before we get into the topic you want to talk about, who were the more quirky guys you were around? I have a name that I'm going to throw out. Just maybe your top two?
The more quirky, I mean, one of the most interesting was Eugene Edgerson.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
He was a character. You know, we had him for 5 years for sure. Who did you have?
The guy that got under the radar was Ricky Anderson.
Oh, he was the epitome of quirky. Oh, my gosh. Loved Ricky Anderson. I think you might remember a home game against UCLA. He steals the ball in the backcourt, crosses half court, gets fouled, but McHale is so loud he couldn't hear the whistle, and he kept dribbling and threw a behind the head reverse dunk that might have been in the dunk contest, would have been the best dunk ever, but it was Ricky celebrated like no tomorrow, only to find out it didn't count because they had called a foul 2 seconds before he dunked it.
Yeah.
The guy was crazy, but a great locker room guy for the team.
No question. And underrated as an athlete, like you just pointed out, one of my great moments was his, at the Wisconsin game that we talked about in 2000. He literally shot you in the game because of his three-point shot, and he actually shot you out of the game late in the game.
Oh, he had the test to see if he had the heat check.
Yeah.
I think he hit two or three threes in the half mounting a comeback for us. And I swear he pulled up one dribble inside of half court at one point on a Steph Curry heat check and didn't draw iron. And to your point, kind of stopped the run right there.
Right, right. No question. Hey, let's go back to your point about Arizona and UCLA kind of being the flagship of the conference. And when those two teams are not doing well, guess what? Everyone else thinks the conference is horrible.
It really is a narrative that a lot of people have talked about for years, and I want to put some stats behind it and why there's a real essence to it. It's not just a storyline. So we talked about Arizona missing the tournament for only the third time in the last 35 years. Well, if you take UCLA and Arizona, they have both missed the tournament only in the same year. Only five times in the last 53 years.
Wow.
So it is a real thing that Arizona and UCLA are staples in the NCAA. And clearly the Wildcats rode the coattails of the Bruins in the 60s and the 70s. But the 80s and 90s were ruled by Arizona getting to the NCAA tournament, even when UCLA was down. So the three most recent times that that's happened, in 2010, 2012, and this year, 2019, in those years, in 2010, the Pac-10 got in two teams, Cal and Washington. They were seeded 8th and 11th. In 2012, they got in two teams. Colorado, by virtue of winning the Pac-12 tournament, was an 11, and Cal got in as the champion of the conference, mind you, they were second place in the conference that year as a 12 seed in the first four, and Washington, who won the league, didn't make the tournament. And then this year, you have obviously Oregon, UW, and ASU. Point being, the highest seed is a 9. So when Arizona and UCLA are both not in the tournament or not playing to the national level, the Pac-12 gets zero respect.
Yeah, no question. It's been the narrative for a long time. I remember back in the day when Luton, it was either Herrick or whomever the coach was at the time, Lavin or whatever, and then Howland. If these two teams were not in the spotlight nationally, people just dismissed the whole thing.
Yeah, and so the perception becomes a reality
right
from the selection committee, and instead of parity like this year, you know, the second place team and the 10th place team were separated by, what, two games in the standings and not much on the scoreboard. We saw that with Arizona and ASU. When you look and dive in deeper, the selection committee is reflecting their lack of respect by, in those years, the most we've gotten are three teams. And this year, the only reason it was three is because Oregon won the Pac-12 tournament, or it would have been two. So two teams in each of those years and none in a protected seed or a favorable seed at all.
Yeah, no question. I do like Oregon the way it's playing now, and I kind of thought that they were the best team in the league this year, even though they had some hiccups throughout the year. I had them winning the Pac-12 tournament, and now I like their chances against Wisconsin. Do you think who's going to go the furthest of the three?
Well, I think you've selected the team that makes the most sense because they're playing the best. I'll say some things that some listeners may not want to hear. So let's break down Oregon real quick. Oregon's best situation right now is they cause havoc. They like to force turnovers. Well, the only thing going against them is Wisconsin doesn't turn the ball over. Very smart team. So that's going to be a fun game to watch because it's strength on strength. But I do have the Ducks advancing at least past that first round like you do. UW against Utah State. I read a stat today. Utah State has played against a zone only 12% of its possessions all year. So seeing Washington's zone, which is really good, they haven't played against a zone very much. However, senior-laden team, very smart, good shooters. Sam Merrill is one of the best unknown names in the country in college basketball. I actually like Utah State in that one as well. Here's the one your listeners don't want to hear me say, and it's a tough one to say it. ASU, OK? a first four. Are they playing great? Well, they're a Jekyll and Hyde. You never know what you're going to get. But I think having the Dayton experience last year and losing in the first four has prepared them for a better preparation of their game tonight. And I actually have them winning tonight, and I think their style of play and how they go at it puts them in a great position to beat Buffalo. And here's why. They're junkyard dogs. They're tough guys. They're physical. Those all three adjectives you would never have said about last year's Arizona team. This year's ASU team embodies that, and it's kind of like on like. You know, Bobby Hurley's imprint is all over Buffalo. I think that could be an interesting game. So as much as it pains me to say that I think ASU could advance, I do think they have a great chance to advance, but I think the Ducks stand the best chance to go the furthest.
No, I agree with you. And your analysis with ASU, I do think they'll win tonight against St. John's. I don't know why. I do like the team. When Remy Martin's playing well, I think the team plays really well because he plays with his fire, his hair on fire, and it's kind of fun to watch. I do think that Buffalo will get them for whatever reason. I was really impressed with Buffalo last year, and that stayed the course with me this year. Pretty good coach. I know he re-upped recently. So we'll see. I mean, this is a great time of year. I don't usually have a dog in the fight because, you know, I'm not in close to Arizona. Now I really don't have a dog in the fight. So it's going to be fun to watch as an observer, just some good basketball.
Yeah, you and I now root for the best games.
Yeah,
I just want, I want chaos. I want a lot of, you know, I still want to see the best teams advance, but I would love to see very tight games, close finishes, March, and this weekend, because there's so many games all day long. I really love the Thursday and Friday of the NCAA tournament because it's wall-to-wall basketball starting tomorrow at, what, 10:13 or whatever the first tip is. It's going to be a great day.
Get your breakfast burrito and a lot of basketball tomorrow. Hey, thanks, thanks, Ryan. Great to be with you again. Always good talking to you.
Glad to be on. Thanks,
great.
Steve.
Thanks, guys. Hey, that completes today. What a great day of talking college basketball. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Talk to you tomorrow here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.